Hello and welcome to the programme. Today we're going to get a perspective on European affairs from Latvia. The country of 1.8 million people gained its independence in 1991 when the Soviet Union collapsed, and it joined the European Union and NATO in 2004. Our guest is Latvia's foreign minister, Baiba Braža. She's held the position since April 2024. In a very diplomatic career, she was ambassador at large for the foreign ministry, the first ever Latvian ambassador to Indonesia, and she was ambassador to the UK during all the Brexit upheavals there. She also worked at NATO as Assistant Secretary General for Public Diplomacy. Foreign Minister, welcome to Talking Europe.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
So people in the Latvian military have been saying that Europe needs to solve its drone problem right now because of these various Russian drone incursions in European airspace. But as you know, there are various hurdles at the EU level, political, financial and technical. I'm guessing you're going to move ahead with these drone plans yourself, not waiting for the EU, perhaps.
We are moving as we speak, actually. We are in the forefront of the developments, and there is various reasons for that. The positive reason is that very high scientific and tech base, easy to do business in Latvia, so our tech companies have really been quite successful in that respect. But also the permissibility environment to experiment. So our drone companies have their own airspace, allocated airspace where they can test. We have military ranges, huge military ranges, where they can do live bombing and electronic warfare, which is very important if you want to have something that works. I mean, it's very nice to develop one very expensive sample, but if you can test it with against the other drones in the real environment, that's nothing. And also we have a superb relationship with Ukrainians and Ukrainian military. So lots of our stuff gets tested on the battlefront in Ukraine. And that's not only drones, but also comms, enablers, connections. So there is a whole thing.
So you're not too worried if there isn't a fast kind of European structure for all of this?
On the European level, and that we talked also with European ministers a number of times, with the Commission leadership, also with the French minister, that we need that permissibility to fail and speed and rapid adoption. So we cannot wait for European, like EDF, which is European Defense Fund, or the other structures allocating, let's say, 5 million for a drone project development, for research development, and that money coming a year later. The company is not going to wait a year to get that money. They just go ahead in advance. They don't then need that European level. And that's where I think some leadership from the Commission on creating more permissible to fail, because half of those companies, if not more, will not be able to develop what they need. And that's normal.
So you're in favor of European Commission leadership on the issue?
Yes, to treat that development differently, those tech companies differently than Rheinmetall or other big companies, Airbuses and so on and so forth, where you have traditional procurement. Yeah. Here, what we need is single source, small procurement, letting them fail, letting them advance, rapidly taking on scientific developments, scientific discoveries, and just being out there. But going back to the European drone issue, so what we were talking about was more on the attack drones, interceptor drones, and so on and so forth. But what we need actually for various places, it's not only on the border, but also we saw in the airports in Copenhagen or other places, is actually ability to identify and detect the drones early on, because you want to do it as early as possible to understand what that is. If you just use some radar or something, it might look like a delta plane, not like a drone.
I want to ask you about the 19th package of sanctions, and targeted liquefied natural gas imports from Russia for the first time. Is it actually a game changer for you, not just on the gas issue, but also closing the loopholes and the sanctions circumvention issue?
So sanctions sometimes are described, why do we need 19 packages? Why can't we have one super package of sanctions and then everything is solved? Well, because there are people in Russia and other countries who are trying constantly to evade those sanctions. So it's constant adaptation. So taking new measures, implementing them, and making sure they work. So we adjust to real life conditions. When, for example, Russia started taking the oil with those shadow fleet tankers, we didn't have measures against them. So first time we did that, putting those ships on the sanctions lists because they have that unique number, identifying them wherever they are, last July only. US had done that before already, so EU followed. So now we have 500-600 ships already on that list. So they are not allowed to be served in the ports. They are not allowed to be, the whole ecosystem is not allowed to work with them. There is one step further that we need to do, which is also the bunkering services in the sea, for example, or elsewhere. Because what we see is those ships are using, they are not entering ports, they are doing ship-to-ship transfers. So that's also something that has to be sanctioned. But on the Russian oil and gas, the Baltic states, of course, we did it for political reasons that we stopped imports of all Russian gas and oil in 22 after the start of the invasion in Ukraine. And we haven't gone back to any of Russian oil. So in gas, more than 70% currently is American LNG. That will change depending on the market because companies buy on the market. And we have quite a bit of oil coming from very different countries, diesel, again, companies buying, but not Russian. And we advise the same for all the companies in Europe. The fact that there's quite a bit of LNG, Russian LNG imports in France, I don't think is the right message to Russians. I don't think it's right to give billions of euros from French taxpayers' money or French companies' incomes to Russian budget from which they wage the war then.
I want to ask you about the whole question of disinformation and hybrid war, because obviously you've dealt with that a lot in your public diplomacy career. An interesting statistic from Gallup World Poll data about approval of Russia's leadership in 2024. And if you look at some African countries, it's particularly high, according to Gallup. 89% approval rating of Russia by respondents in Mali, 81% in Burkina Faso, 59% approval in Benin. Has the EU simply vacated this information space in Africa particularly?
I haven't seen those ratings, but I presume that they have a method how to conduct them. They're probably polling in those countries is slightly more challenging than in European countries. But quite clearly, Russia has very clear objectives for their actions in each and every country. Yeah, and that relates to European countries, to the US, Asia, but also to Africa. And for African countries, and I've met the ministers from all those states you mentioned, but also from others, none of those ministers are happy about the invasion in Ukraine because they don't accept that a neighboring country can invade the other country. So there is one rule that they are not happy with. How they express it, how they manage it, it's quite, again, different from how we perceive it. But also in that respect, the Russian objectives in some of the countries in Africa is pretty straightforward. They want to help certain groups take control of certain regions, of certain resources, to exploit the resources. They're not interested in governing Mali. They are interested in certain parts, but also pushing European countries out, especially France, from some of the countries.
Nonetheless, we've obviously seen young Malians brandishing Russian flags in demonstrations and so on. But as we don't have much time, I want to come on to one other issue with you, Foreign Minister, which is migration. As you know, the European Court of Human Rights has held several landmark hearings related to migrant pushbacks on the border between Belarus and Latvia. Not only Latvia is involved, but Poland and Lithuania as well. What do you make of these allegations of migrant pushbacks? Are they violations of human rights, and what action is needed on that?
I think one has to be very clear that first we thought it was, legal migration. And then after a few weeks, it was very clear what was happening on the side of Belarus, that they were gathering people flown in from different parts of the world. They were gathering them in the groups, bringing them to the border, And that was very much through the Belarus KGB organized effort. And then pushing them across the border. So the reaction on our side at that moment became very clear that, I'm sorry, this is not anymore the issue of asylum or migration. This is organized activity with a particular objective of violating our border. So, of course, borders are borders, and it's a border of the EU, NATO, and everything else.
Sure, but aren't the rights of migrants being violated, even if Lukashenko is using it as a political weapon, nonetheless?
Well, they have the right to ask for asylum in Belarus.
Right.
I mean, they are all on Belarus territory. They have the ask there, and they will have to be granted. I mean, Belarus should be able to do that. It's considered quite a safe country, no? But on our side, these type of pushback, so now there is a border infrastructure, the fence, the technology is in place. We are spending quite a bit of money on actually overtime, both for border guards, but nowadays also for customs officers, because customs officers are the one guarding the sanctions regime for the whole of the EU. The exports going to Central Asia or elsewhere go through our border. And on the migrants, there is a specific regulation, which also was similarly adopted by Lithuania, Poland, but also by Finland, which creates an exclusion zone where there is the right of the border guards to make sure that no person enters or leaves it. So, for example, I'm not allowed also to just as a citizen to go into border regions because you require a particular permit. So, and within that border, the border guards make sure that our territorial integrity and independence is not violated by Belarusian KGB and other KGB activities.
We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being my guest, Foreign Minister of Latvia, Vaiva Braža. Glad you could watch this episode here on Talking Europe. Do stay with us on France 24.